Evening and calling the State Affairs Committee to order at 5:32 p.m. Tuesday, March 7th. Gonna skip the roll because I see Representative Birch, Representative Johnson, Representative Tuck, Representative Knopp, Representative Ledoux, and myself, Representative Chris Tompkins here, which is a quorum of six to conduct business. And the business is pretty straightforward this evening. It is public testimony for HB 44 and HCR 1. And before we get there, to note, at the sponsor's request, we're going to hold this bill indefinitely. And I believe there's still conversations happening, and we'll let those play out. But at this time, I'm going to open public testimony on HB 44.
Could you restate that? You hold the bill, and what does that mean?
It means we're not going to move the bill.
Oh. Period?
Probably not period, but there's still conversations between the sponsor and I believe members of the committee and others. There's thinking happening and just wanted to allow that to happen.
Indefinitely has a certain meaning to me.
Means I don't know when we're going to move it. Okay. And I when we get the word from the sponsor feels like it's a good and policy product that's ready for prime time, we'll move it. But at this point, not feeling that way.
Thanks.
Representative Ledoux.
I think what Representative Birch might be thinking in terms of the motion to postpone indefinitely kind of kills a bill. So,
yeah. Point well taken. No intent to kill the bill, just want the sponsor to feel as though the committee process is fully complete. So this brings us to public testimony, and maybe we'll start with online public testimony. And Barbara Hood in Anchorage, if you can hear us, can you please identify yourself and state your affiliation as well as present your testimony?
Thank you, Representative. I'm here in my own capacity. I'm a resident of Anchorage. My name is Barbara Hood, H-O-O-D, and I just wanted to testify in support of this legislation. I'm aligned with it being held indefinitely. I'm not quite sure what that means. I feel it's all the more important to speak up in support of it under the circumstances because I think it's an excellent step in the right direction, and I commend those who brought it forward. If I can finish my testimony briefly, I feel that when someone has a conflict of interest, it's very, very important that they not take public action or action on the public behalf unless the full body is aware the conflict, has weighed in on the merits or advantages or disadvantages of allowing that member to go forward and vote. And I think we have so many issues on the plate of Alaskans right now, so many issues on your plate that require utmost public faith and confidence in the process. And when there are conflicts that are not treated openly in the public eye, I think it undermines everything you're doing and the confidence in what you're doing. And I just commend you for bringing this forward. I hope it stays on your plate. I know there's a lot of other things on your plate, but I feel this is super important for Alaskans and for our own, the integrity of our own process, our legislative process, and public faith is, I think, very important right now. All of our institutions are, we need to know that all the decisions being made on the public's behalf are being made with the public interest foremost in mind, and I think personal business conflicts, all those things, we all have them. But I think the legislature needs to take into account, and legislators need to protect the public from any influences they may bear on the decision-making that's taking place. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hood, for that testimony. Are there any questions from the committee? Seeing none, and Ms. Hood, I'll just take a moment to clarify. I think I used very poor words, as Representative Ledoux and Representative Birch noted. We're holding the bill in committee until the sponsor feels that the bill is ready to go ahead. So we're doing this at the sponsor's behest. My own personal perspective is the bill feels pretty darn good, and I'm personally supportive of it. But until the sponsor feels the bill's mature, we're not going to move faster than the sponsor would like us to. Hoping that clarifies things, I see Jake Jacobson online from Kodiak. Mr. Jacobson, could you identify yourself, state your affiliation, and present your testimony?
Yes, I'm Jake Jacobson. I'm a 50-year resident of Alaska, which constitutes most of my life. I'm representing myself and about 40 Alaskan residents, family members of mine. I live primarily in Kodiak now, and while I'm not here, I'm in Kotzebue. On this HB 44, all of you should be ashamed of yourselves at your lack of ethics rules. It's just unconscionable. And if you don't put some teeth into those rules, I just can't understand how an honest person would not want to do that. Plain and simple message, gentlemen and ladies, I hope you do pass this. However, I have my doubts that you'll do it. Good day.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobson, for that testimony. A note for the record, Representative Wohl joined us at 5:37. Are there any questions from the committee for Mr. Jacobson? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Jacobson. And I should note that Reed Magdans in my office is from Kotzebue and passes on his regards. And that takes us to testimony in the room. And I see Margot Waring signed up to testify. Ms. Waring, if you have testimony you'd like to present, please come up. Identify yourself, state any affiliation.
I believe I was the second person, but...
I guess what's that property in mathematics and multiplication?
Transitive property?
Transitive property. We have an MIT student in the room here. But if you wouldn't mind the transitive approach to testimony.
I don't mind. For the record, my name is Margot Waring, and I'm a resident of Juneau and have been for many decades. I appreciate the willingness of members of the legislature to try and provide more guidance to members about conflicts of interest. But I think that, as the previous two speakers have said, the current legislation leaves things to be desired. Most voters believe that when there are conflicts of interest, legislators are not permitted to vote. They are mistaken in that, but I think it shows their general belief that it's inappropriate behavior to vote when you have a conflict of interest. I'd like to point out a few things in the current version of the bill that I had questions about. In on the second page, section 1.3, except as provided in G of this section, and going on down, the standard that's used is employment. And clearly people have many other financial aspects to their lives than just employment. And I think that those should be recognized. Similarly, in D of that section, it talks about receiving a financial benefit of more than $10,000 of income. But there's no mention of assets whose value could be improved or other financial interests that may not have matured at the time to give $10,000 worth of income. And furthermore, I think that the standard is very high when we think about those unfortunate instances of corruption in the legislature. Every single person who belonged to that corrupt club did so for less than $10,000. And so I think that we need to rethink a standard that may be artificially high. Moving on down in G of that same section, if I read it correctly, it does say that the uniform rules of the legislature take precedence over the statute, and which is, I'm sure, why you're also discussing HCR 1. But it means that there really isn't very much teeth in the way of teeth in this section. if any change to the rules can negate what the section says. So, you know, in general, I think we're moving along in the right direction, but I think there are still some things that need to be done. And of course, I think the one that mostly needs to be done is that when a legislator has a conflict of interest, that person should have to abstain from voting. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Warren. And any questions for Ms. Warren from the committee? If you wouldn't mind, Ms. Warren. Representative Wall.
Thank you. And thank you for your testimony. You alluded to a case in the past, I assume you meant the VICO, and you mentioned it was less than $10,000. But
For some.
Sure. I'm thinking that some of that you're discussing is say, in the form of a bribe or something, which this isn't even talking about at all.
No. I think that what I was trying to say is that our past experience indicates that people will do things in their financial interest for less than $10,000. And so people may value something for whatever reason that is priced at less than $10,000. That was the point I badly made, apparently.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Knopf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since we have you in the hot seat, and you were so ladylike in leaving out the other word behind the corrupt club there. So appreciate that. I knew where you were.
Of that generation where you don't say that word.
I knew where you were going. So, and I appreciate you making the comment about the financial analysis, because I think we say substantial financial benefit. Mm-hmm. We try to define that as $10,000 or excess. And you made my case. I argued that early on in the presentation that there are so many ways to have a conflict of interest that are not financially related. So I appreciate you bringing that forward. So I'm going to agree with you that the process we currently have on the floor is very bad. It needs to be fixed. Anybody objects, you have to vote. Even if you truly have a conflict and don't want to vote, you do not have a choice, the way the system is set up. So I'm all in favor of changing that. I think where I struggle is with the rest of the definitions, because as you mentioned, there's so many conflicts that are not financially related, and you kind of get into ethics at that point, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sure where this will end up and what I'm willing to support. I'm willing to support, obviously, the initial change. But I guess my question, other than the corrupt club we spoke about, in all my years of watching gavel to gavel and participating in municipal election and even being here now my freshman year, we seem to err on the side of caution, and our floor procedures sometimes don't function very well. And I am really reluctant to get in there and start muddying the waters with everybody, I'm going to say, declaring on the side of caution to over-declare. And so, and I try to recall, and I cannot ever recall, excluding the corrupt club, which of anybody that truly had a conflict of interest. And so, I mean, they may be there, and it may not always be financial. So, I don't know if you have anything specific recently, I guess, is maybe my question to you. I mean, you obviously, you're local, so you watch it a lot, I'm sure.
And, if I may, through the chair.
Sure.
I agree that there are potential conflicts that are not financial. Part of what I was trying to say is I think the standard for even a financial conflict of interest is a bar set very high. I think it's true that in recent years, people have routinely been excused from abstaining, made to vote, but I have both worked for the legislature for a number of years and have been a student of it for many years, and I think there are many people who had conflicts who voted.
Okay.
Without naming any names.
Okay. Good enough. Thank you.
Representative Tuck?
No, not a question, but a comment real quick.
I think you're free to go.
You're free to go, yeah. No, just a comment. I do want to say that there was a recent one, I think it was 2013, 2014, to where a representative failed to declare a conflict and had gotten hit with a huge violation. All right, so there are times when there is conflicts, but in that case, the person didn't declare it. And it was just to give you a little bit more background, it had to do with a particular bill. So,
yeah. And Representative Knopf had a predetermined conflict, so has to duck out at 5:45. Thank you, Representative Knopf. And that takes us to the other side of the transitive in-room testimony, Douglas Mertz. Mr. Mertz, if you'd come up, identify yourself, state any affiliation, and present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Douglas Mertz. I'm a Juneau resident, speaking for myself. I'm a longstanding attorney here in Juneau, and for many years I was an assistant attorney general. Part of my duties as an assistant attorney general was administering the Executive Branch Ethics Act, which, as you all know, was the act which this legislature passed to apply ethics rules and procedures to members of the executive branch and members of boards and commissions. As an attorney, I'm also very aware of the Code of Judicial Conduct, which applies to judges and other people in the judicial branch. The point of that comparison is that for those other branches of our government, the rule is clear and strict. If you have a conflict of interest, you do not take official action. You don't. Period. It's only the legislature that has effectively exempted itself from that rule. And I think the public is generally aware of it. And when they hear about the tactic that is used on the floor in both houses of requiring or allowing a single vote to, in effect, excuse a conflict, people are aghast at this. And I think they have a very high understanding that you are being, if not hypocritical, you are being inconsistent in applying a certain rule to the other branches of government, but not to our, to yourselves. The rule should be the same for every public servant. If you have a conflict, you do not take official action. I am aware in discussions with individual legislators of the justification that if you require somebody to abstain from voting when they have a conflict, it effectively deprives that member's constituents of that vote. Well, I think most of the constituents wouldn't mind at all being deprived of a biased vote, a vote that is motivated by money or by some other improper interest. So I would not stick on that point at all. There are a couple items here. You know, in the Department of Law, we used to have a saying, the road to hell is paved with bad drafting. And I think there are a couple things in here that say that. Section 1 of HB 44 refers to legislators doing various things that would benefit the legislator's family, or persons with whom the legislator is negotiating for employment, et cetera, et cetera, but not things that would simply benefit that legislator. Interestingly, the companion bill, HCR1, does identify things that would benefit the legislator, but somehow that gets missing from HB 44, and I assume that that is just an oversight, that you really intend the rules to apply to conflicts that apply just to the legislator himself or herself. It also, I would echo Ms. Waring's comment about the different types of interests and that there are interests that can motivate one to do things that are not financial. You might want to take action in a particular way because you have a romantic interest, for instance, or something else that is not strictly financial. So I would be very wary of defining the conflict solely in terms of money. I think those are my only substantive comments. one can fool around and adjust definitions of what exactly constitutes a conflict of interest, but the main point is for all public servants, if there is a conflict, you must not take official action. So that's the position I would urge on you.
Thank you, Mr. Mertz. Questions from the committee? Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your service, and thank you for being here this evening as well, Mr. Mertz. One of the things, are you aware of any, and I don't know the answer to this, obviously, but are you aware of any instance where somebody has declared a conflict on the floor, House or Senate, and not have had an objection raised, where there's no objection raised and that individual is permitted not to vote on an item?
I've never heard of it happening.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can't say that I've looked every time that's come up, but I've never heard of it.
But in theory, if somebody announces something that is so egregious to the body that, you know, it's so, you know, apparently obvious as a conflict, presumably there would not be that one objection or multiple objections that it takes to cease action. Secondly, and again, I've been corresponding with folks, again, through the chair, if I might, for follow-up. I've been corresponding with a lot of folks, and somebody was telling me about a conflict of interest on their job, and I said, well, you know, there's 40 people in this building, in the House, in any case, that basically spent about a year and a half, you know, knocking on doors and talking to people and constituents and talking to the public. And in most job interviews, you know, you deal, you know, maybe you have a hiring team that's two or three people or one, or, you know, one person makes the hire. But in the case for the 40 people in this building, there's about 17,000 constituents and presumably, you know, 5 to 10,000 voters that actually weighed in on that hiring decision. And there's also the small matter of the POFD, the Public Official Financial Disclosure, which basically illustrates, I mean, it's pretty much laying all the laundry out on the table as far as, ownership interests and everything. So I personally, I see it as distinctly different from a conventional hire where you would, you know, you'd go out and hire an engineer to do something or whatever. But do you think that the voters, given that information, are in fact fairly well qualified in making a judgment call as to whether, if, you know, whether somebody's a business agent for a labor union or an employee of a large multinational corporation or a hairdresser working, you know, and voting on hair? I mean, do you think the public has actually got the information and the tools with them to act in the voting booth in their best interest?
I think the public ultimately has to be the final arbiter, but do they get the information? Mm-hmm. I would question whether, for instance, the members of the Corrupt Bastards Club reported what they received on their financial disclosures.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's exactly that sort of thing, the impropriety may well be under the table and out of sight, in which case the voters have a handicap.
Yeah. Well, I guess I guess my response on that is, if people, we're all human, and the people that are going to lie, cheat, and steal, they're going to lie, cheat, and steal no matter, you know, how big that rule book is. And, you know, I think at some level there's got to be individual accountability. And I'm a little, and I've read through this pretty close, and I'm a little worried about just getting tangled up in, you know, 40 people on the floor sitting there trying to decide, you know, whether somebody's got a bigger, you know, conflict than they do. And it just seems like it could just really ball up fast. But I do appreciate your testimony and your perspective, and may want to follow up with you later on that. So
thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Representative Birch, for those comments. Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Mertz, for your testimony. And I guess I have a question for you, which is, you have experience in the judiciary and legal areas, and certainly if a judge is, if he knows one of the defendants in a trial will recuse himself because he's personally involved, and that makes sense. Do you make a distinction with the legislature here of us being a citizen legislature, and some are fishermen or miners or engineers or teachers or truck drivers or whatever they do in their time off, which is getting less and less. But, you know, let's say we work 4 months in Juneau and we're home for 8 months and we may do other kinds of things. I mean, do you weigh that into your words that you just said recently?
Yeah, and it does.
We're not judges.
No, it makes a difference. You're out there, you should be meeting the constituents, holding your town halls, listening to people tell you what they want to see from you when you go down there to Juneau. As long as they're not doing it in a way that involves money or some other improper emolument. And I think that's a critical distinction. Another distinction is with the judges, they are required not only to recuse themselves when they have a conflict, but also when there's the mere appearance of a conflict. Even if they say justifiably, I would not be biased by my relationship with this person or that person. So they take it actually a step farther. And I wouldn't even urge you to get into that thicket. But it is something to bear in mind that there is a high standard in the other branches of government.
Follow-up, Representative Wall?
No. I guess the only thing would be when you mentioned the Corrupt Bastards Club and stuff, that's a pretty low bar as far as, you know, I think we've hopefully gotten past all that, and those people were hopefully mostly punished, and the system has changed quite a bit since then. But I wasn't here back then, you know, and I think when you say things, well, monetary is one thing, but romantic or whatever, I mean, that's just a, you know. For example, we had a bill on the floor the other day about one of the boards and commissions that was, we had to vote whether to pass, you know, extend it. And someone was a due-paying member to that board. You know, is that a conflict? I don't know. I mean, they just have a license to practice when they're not here. They have a license to practice, you know, hairdressing or barbers or whatever it happens to be. You know, I wouldn't necessarily think that's a conflict. But these questions we have come up a lot here, and it gets very entangled in it. Right. You could have a whole, you know, semester-long class on it, I'm sure.
We've got to be reasonable at some point, and I don't think anybody would say, if you're an engineer, you must never vote on a bill that affects engineers. So I don't think we're there, but it's something that we all must bear in mind as we craft these rules.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux, did you have a question?
Any further questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Mertz, for your testimony. And a few other people have come online, although are there others in the room wishing to testify? Okay, seeing no one. Go to George Pierce and Kasiloff. Mr. Pierce, if you can hear us, can you identify yourself for the record, state any affiliation, and present your testimony? Mr. Pierce, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Oh, could you identify yourself, state your affiliation, if any, and present your testimony?
Yes, I'm George Pierce. I'm calling. I live in Kasiloff, Alaska. I'm representing myself. Thank you for bringing this HB 44 to light. Read a version of this bill. I like excusing from voting in instances where a legislator may have a financial conflict of interest. I believe no other legislator should be able to override a legislator's direct conflict of interest. I always thought the better legislator, man or woman, would have backed out of the vote due to a conscience. Can't recall any of these years that ever happened. But yes, on section two, too many times it looked as if other legislators vested in favor of their personal interest instead of serving the public. For an example, SB 21, the deciding vote was a legislator and also a manager for ConocoPhillips. That's a definite conflict of interest. Shame on you for allowing that to happen. Administrative hearings. Actually, should be heard in front of an agency. These were all good. Then I got to Section 5. This act takes effect only if the 13th Alaska State Legislature passes a resolution that amends Rule 34B. Rules to require a member to request to be excused from the voting on a question before legislators when a legislator has a conflict of interest. Then allow the member to be approved or disapproved by a majority vote. Rule number 34 needs to be changed. You ever watch this rule being used? It goes to a vote to be allowed or not to be allowed. It always yes comes back, and along with a lot of laughing and giggling. I agree. Get rid of Rule 34B. Take it to a vote. It's a good start. Now go ahead and finish the job and make it right. These conflict of interest is a joke. There's conflict of interest when somebody works for the oil company over, an executive, and you allow them to vote on oil taxes. Same with education. The corrupt system is in Juneau. Everybody can see what's going on, and it's about time that you make this rule apply for everybody. It applies for the borough assembly meetings down here in Kenai. There's a conflict that people don't get to vote. So it should be that way everywhere, and get rid of the corruption down there. Thank you for my testimony, for taking my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Pierce. Any questions from the committee for Mr. Pierce? Seeing none, thank you very much for making the time, Mr. Pierce, to testify. And that takes us to our last testifier this evening, Mr. Carl Berger, calling from Anchorage. Mr. Berger, can you identify yourself, state any affiliation, and present your testimony?
Yes, hello. My name is Carl Berger. I'm a 51-year resident of Alaska, most recently living in Anchorage, but for many years in the Kuskokwim area and up in the Kotzebue area. My testimony is as follows. Each legislature must determine his own appropriate course of action to be taken when a potential conflict occurs. The key to potential conflicts is the maintenance of public transparency in all activities of both bodies of the legislature at all times. Public trust in legislative activities must be maintained at all times, with no question of a conflict of interest occurring in any decision-making process. I urge your support in passing these guiding principles. I would like to add some additional housekeeping is also needed to strengthen legislative integrity and public trust and support. Community and state leaders lead by example when financial conditions dictate necessity, such is the case with our current budget dilemma. I note that Governor Walker has reduced his salary by 40% to support cost savings. All Alaskans have given up 50% of their PFP checks, and many are willing to tax themselves in some way for the good of the state. Many state employees have taken pay cuts or reduced hours on their jobs. Yet, the legislators continue to collect an exorbitant amount of federal per diem, which has no accounting attached to it, a $50,400 salary for 3 to 4 months' work, a pullet account for office expenses between $12,000 and $20,000 when office expenses are minimal, per diem, which is room and board for some legislators who live at home in Juneau or in Anchorage when legislative sessions have been held there in the past, also allow their lavish multiple trips worldwide that are paid at state expense, that are simply junkets with no real purpose and no reports of activities. Personal moving allowances that include washer dryers, pianos, and compressors, and other questionable goods to be taken home at state expense, and the list goes on. The time for all of you to clean house has long passed. Please do the right thing and do it now. thank you for an opportunity to express my feelings to you.
Thank you, Mr. Berger, and sorry for getting the G as a soft G instead of a hard G. The first go-runner, are there any questions for Mr. Berger from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Berger, for those comments and for taking the time this evening. And seeing no one else online or in the room to testify, I'm going to close public testimony in HB 44. And I'm going to set aside HB 44 until further notice. This takes us to HCR 1. I'm going to open public testimony. And I don't see anyone online. Is there anyone in the room who'd like to testify in HCR 1? Seeing none, I'm going to close testimony in HCR 1. And that concludes our business this evening. And I'm going to adjourn the State Affairs Committee at 6:08 p.m.